We're studying in the Gospel of Matthew, the section called the Sermon on the Mount. We've been studying there for a number of weeks now. We're down to that part in Matthew chapter 6, where in verse 19, Jesus says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moth and rust do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Old Testament and New Testament, God has always been interested in where people's hearts are. Certainly He's dictated various external things that people should do, whether it would have been sacrifice, or following Him into the desert, or keeping certain rituals and ceremonies, or praying to Him daily, or giving to the needy, all sorts of things God has told us to do. But always His interest has been is where the person's heart is during those things. We'll find, for example, in the great minor prophet Amos, how God says that He rejected their sacrifices. He was not honored when they kept holy days in His name because, number one, they were busy saying in their hearts, even as they did these things, "When will this all be over with so I can get back to business?" And number two, because all during the week, or all during the times other than on these days that they were keeping as holy, they were busy defrauding each other, stealing from each other, and doing all that they could to take advantage of others to their own benefit. And so God said He rejected their worship. In Jesus' day, a similar situation had developed. The religious leaders of the Jewish people, the predominant number of them were of the group called the Pharisees and the teachers of the law. These men were the ones who actually taught the people what God's Word said. They were also the ones who were to be modeling or serving as examples of how people who truly were devoted to pleasing God should live. And yet, in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus identifies these people as hypocrites, using a Greek word that meant actor, one who plays a part, one who is different than what they pretend to be. Jesus accused these men of being hypocrites. And people were following them, not just in what they said, but in the example they set in their life. And so, as we've seen the last couple of weeks particularly, when they would go out and do their public exercises of religion, when they did those things that were supposed to be great examples of a person truly devoted to God, they helped the needy, they prayed regularly, they even fasted as a way of saying, "God, a relationship with You is more important than meeting the needs of this human body." They were not doing those things because they were genuinely interested in the needy, and they were not doing these things because they genuinely wanted to have communion with God in prayer. Nor were they even concerned with truly putting God first in their life, even above feeding this body. Rather, they always made sure they did it in such a way that other people could see them doing it. Because for them, their religious practice had become something to be seen of men rather than to be seen of God. And they were more interested in being honored and praised by men for their supposed holiness than being praised and honored and glorified by God for truly having a right relationship with Him. As I was coming down this morning, I had the opportunity to listen on my phone, because I use my phone for a lot of things besides a phone, a sermon by one of my favorite authors. I've seldom have actually heard him teach. I usually read what he teaches. His name is John MacArthur, preacher for a large church out in California called Grace Community Church. But this morning, as I was listening to him, he was talking about man's tendency to be man-centered and then view God that way rather than being God-centered and seeing man as God sees him. And as I heard him talking about that, I thought that's exactly what's happening here in the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus is describing men who had a man-centered view of God rather than a God-centered view of man. They were looking at themselves and what they wanted and what they thought they should have and then interpreting everything about God in light of that rather than hearing from their own scriptures what God Himself said about man and what it took to truly please God. As a result, they treasured, that is, that which was valuable to them was praise and honor of others. First of all, their own peers. They wanted to make sure all the other Pharisees and teachers of the law knew that they were in compliance. They yielded very much to peer pressure among themselves. But even beyond that, they wanted all the ordinary folks who looked up to them to be impressed. And so they treasured, they valued that honor that came from others. But there's something else they valued as well. There's something else that was treasure to them. And it's the very thing we often think of when we use the word treasure. These men loved things. They loved money. They loved the things money could buy. They loved the things money could provide for them. And at the very head of their group, not in the Pharisee party, but over in the Sadducee party, was the high priest and his family. They were the richest of all. They had found even a way to turn the worship of God into a thing they could profit from. Not because they got a meager stipend from being priest at the temple, though they did get that. That meant nothing to them. They had found a way to turn the whole temple into a money-making machine for them. And then they would turn right around and tell people, look, we are so wealthy, we have so much, God has blessed us with this because we're such holy people. There's folks today doing the same thing. They're cashing in on their supposed spirituality at the expense of the people of God. And that's what these men had done. So Jesus says to those who are gathered around Him as He delivers this message that makes a clear distinction between these men and what they were teaching the people of God to be like and what God really wanted. And He says, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth. Very interesting thing if we were all readers of the Greek language instead of the English as we are. The word store up in the Greek is the word thesaurizo. And yet the word treasure is thesauros. It's the verb and the noun form of the same word in Greek. Jesus is saying, do not treasure treasure. And the word treasure in the Greek was not just the normal word that they would use for money, but rather it was that particular kind of things, material things, including money, that people would have in excess that they could put away, that they could store up. Jesus was not saying people should not make money. He wasn't saying people should not be concerned about providing for themselves and their family and even have some left over to help the needy and to give to God's work. Rather, He's talking about those people who were bent entirely and totally towards how much they could accumulate just for the accumulation's sake. You know, one of my favorite cartoons growing up was Donald Duck. And remember, he had Uncle Scrooge. And what was Uncle Scrooge's favorite thing to do? To go into his vault and count his money. Jesus says that's what these men are like. Very interesting that the scholars tell us that this word thesaurizo, to store up or to treasure, carried with it at its very root the whole idea of stacking something up and laying it out. And from that gradually came this very specific idea of storing up or treasuring. And it would almost be like the man who's got the money, and so he keeps stacking all of his coins up, see how many stacks he can make on his money table. He's laying it out. He's storing it up. Now, this word is used in a good way in the Scripture as well. So, for example, we will hear the Apostle Paul talking to the Christians who lived in Corinth in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, a passage we recognize because we see it as part of our authority and reason for taking up a contribution as a church. But he says in 1 Corinthians 16 and in verse 2, on the first day of every week, each one of you should treasure a sum of money in keeping with his income. We know in the older translations it will say he should lay aside or lay up or put aside. It's our word thesaurizo, to store away, to put aside. And so here's it's being used in a good way. And again, we can read in 2 Peter chapter 3, talking about something that has nothing at all to do with money, but he talks about what's coming in the future. 2 Peter chapter 3, he talks about how in the Old Testament, the world was destroyed by water because of the wickedness of man. And then in verse 7, he says, by the same word of God, the present heavens and earth are reserved, stored up, or treasured for fire. They're being saved. They're being set aside for what's coming. They are reserved for fire, being kept for the day of judgment and destruction of ungodly men. And so clearly Jesus here is looking specifically at these men and this practice they had of seeing how much they could accumulate, far more than they needed or would ever use for themselves. He will even tell later in one of his parables about the rich man that his crops did even better than he expected. And so what does he do? He says, what am I going to do with all this greater and greater wealth I have? I know what I'll do. I'll tear down my storehouses and build bigger ones. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. You see, for him, the pursuit of the treasure was the most important thing. And you know what happened in that parable? That night, God either audibly or inaudibly said to that man, tonight, your soul will be required of you. He was going to die and not even enjoy all this treasure that he had been accumulating all this time. So back to the sermon then, Jesus says, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth. What's the problem with treasures that are of this earth? He says, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. None of it is guaranteed to be permanent. He's talking about more than money here. One of the very valuable things that the ancients put a lot of stock in was clothing. A lot of people do that today too. But they loved, if they were wealthy, to have fine clothes. The poor man may only have one or two changes of garments, if he was fortunate. But the rich man would have all these robes. If he could afford it, they would be trimmed in purple or even be all in purple because that was the most valuable, expensive kind. And if he could all afford it, he would have it made out of linen because that was more expensive than the common cotton. And if he really was rich, he would have it made out of wool. And yet, what's a problem even today when you have something made out of wool? Have you ever pulled anything out of the closet out of wool that's been in there for a few years and you haven't checked it? And you suddenly find little holes chewed in it? There seems to be a kind of moth that just loves to eat woolen clothing. And so then you put them in closets made out of cedar, or you have mothballs in there to prevent that happening. That's what Jesus is picturing for them. Part of their treasure was something that the moth could eat. Their expensive clothing. Some of it was that which other things could eat. It's interesting in the King James and other translations like the NIV I'm using from, it says where rust destroys. When really in the Greek the word literally isn't rust. It is a word that means to be eaten up by whatever. Imagine if you have a huge storage silo full of grain. It can be eaten up by rats or other vermin. If it's left out in the field, it'll be eaten up by the birds or the wild animals. And even though it's treasure to that person, it's in excess of what they really needed, and they were planning on storing it for a long time, it's being eaten away. And certainly if it's something made out of metal or wood or something, it gets eaten away in other ways, by weathering or rust or whatever. But Jesus talks about those treasures that people have that moth can eat, that can be eaten away by other things, or even if it's money, thieves can break in and steal. I guess all of us by now have known people, maybe neighbors of ours, maybe even us, that while we were not home one day, someone broke into the house and they took whatever was considered valuable. It might have been jewelry. It might have been money. It might have been the new flat screen television. It might have been the laptop computer. Or it might have been all those things. Because thieves can break in and steal. And that which was treasured has now been lost. And even if it wasn't stolen by a thief, it always faces the possibility, because it's not permanent treasure. Jesus is telling His disciples and those who have been listening to the Pharisees and following their example of treasuring material things that they need instead to truly treasure that treasure which is eternal and cannot ever be lost. You see, the Pharisees, as the whole Sermon on the Mount is telling us, had the whole wrong view of the world and themselves and everything around it. Again, because it was a man-centered view of God. The sermon begins by talking about the Beatitudes, because Jesus is trying to correct their wrong view of themselves. They were not men who were humble. They were not men who were mourning. They were not men who were poor in spirit. They were not men who were hungry and thirsty for righteousness. And yet that's the person God is seeking. And then after Jesus talks about that, He talks about their wrong view of the world around them. They did not see themselves as the salt of the earth and the light of the world. They did not see that God had given them that mission to change the world through their service to God. And they had the wrong view of morality. They thought if they just kept the outward rules, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not lie, that that's what morality was all about. But Jesus says it's not just about murder, it's about hating. It's not just about adultery, it's about lust. It's not just about making an oath that you're telling the truth, it's are you telling the truth and do you treasure truth? It's not just about treating your neighbor right, it's about treating all people right. Loving even your enemies. And they were wrong about their whole view about their religious exercises. They thought, oh, we'll give our money, we'll pray, we'll fast, and we'll do it in such a way that everybody can see that we're doing it, and they will praise us and honor us for it. And Jesus says, when you think of your religious practice is that way, the only reward you get is that praise from men. You don't get any from God. So why should we be surprised that they had the wrong view about material things as well. If they had the wrong view about themselves, the world around them, morality, and even worshiping and serving God, then certainly they're going to have the wrong view about material things as well. And then they would tell people, look, I've got all this stuff because I'm doing so well with God, and if you'll follow my example, God will bless you too. There's preachers preaching that today. But Jesus says, that's not true. That's not what is important. Instead, we ought to have a single treasure, not a treasure of material things of all kinds, whether it's money, silver and gold, clothing, possessions, property, things. But we should just have one treasure, the treasure of a right relationship with God. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moth and rust do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, you know, when he's talking about what they had, he called it treasures with an S. But when he talks about what the person of God has, he says, where your treasure, just one, is, there will your heart be also. Later he'll tell the story in a couple of parables, one right after the other, about a man who was in, I guess we'd say, the real estate business. And then one day he found a certain field. And in that one field was a treasure. It doesn't even tell us what kind of treasure it was. It was something that made that one field so valuable to him that he went and sold everything else he had, so he could buy and own and have just that one field. And then immediately after that, he tells a story, and these are both found in Matthew chapter 13, by the way, and I think also in Luke, but I know in Matthew 13. He tells a man who was a buyer and seller of pearls. These would be the natural pearls of that time that were gotten at great effort by actually divers going down and pulling up the oysters and other mollusk that would create them inside of them, then it would open them up. And so this man was an expert in pearls, and he dealt with only the finest. But then one day he found a pearl of such quality and such value, he gave everything else he had so he could have that one treasure. And it's clear that in doing that, it was not for the intent of turning around and selling it, but because he wanted to own such a treasure himself. Jesus is saying in those parables the same thing he's saying here. We need to have our treasure in heavenly things. And wherever your treasure is, whatever you count as treasure, that's what your heart will be focused on as well. Because these men treasured material things, that's where their heart was. That's what was important to them. And when we think of heart, we simply are talking about those things that make up the affections, the will, the desire, and the mind of a person. That's where their desire was. That's where their affections were. That's where their will was. They were constantly looking for ways to have more of it. Jesus will describe them very simply over in the Gospel of Luke as lovers of money. And why is that a problem? Because those who are lovers of money are never lovers of God. That's why he will then go on to say that we need to have not only a single treasure, and that's what is important to heaven, and that's what we need to be putting aside and treasuring up, but we also need to have a single vision. That's the only thing we see. You know, for the man who knows how to make money and is focused on that, everything he looks at in terms of whether it'll make money for him or not. Or will he lose money? Or will it be a wash? So his eye is focused on that. But a person who is interested in heaven and heavenly things and what's important to the King of heaven, then he looks at everything, she looks at everything with that kind of an eye. And so Jesus will say the eye is the lamp of the body. He's appealing to a physical illustration here. He says, our eye is what guides and directs all of our body. It is the lamp. It's what illuminates. It's what makes the rest of the body know what to do. The eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are good, the NIV says, interestingly, the King James says, if your eyes is single, the New American Standard said, if your eye is clear, the truth of the matter is, all of those and none of those are good translations of the Greek, because there isn't a word in English that quite fits the Greek word. The Greek word there that is translated either by single or clear or good literally meant that which was one. And it originally had the idea when it came to eyes, because in ancient times, you know, they didn't have treatment for eye problems. And people then, just like now, had all sorts of eye problems. Some were born with crossed eyes. Some was born with a wandering eye. So one eye is working and the other one seems to be just looking off somewhere else. Some were born with a bad eye so that the one eye wasn't functioning at all. It might even be sort of grayed over. I understand that because I have a son that way. One of his eyes was gray. Growing up, we had a dog that was that way. I don't mean to make a comparison between a dog and a son, but we've all seen people like that or animals. And that was the original idea of this word. Haplos, I think it is in the Greek. And Jesus talks about when your eyes are healthy, are single, are working together, able to function like they're ought to, then your whole body will be full of light. But he's not teaching us about ophthalmology here, is he? He's talking about spiritual things. He's talking about the spiritual eye, not so much the physical. He's talking about how the spiritual eye of a person, what a person is focused on, that determines what their entire life will be composed of. And so he says, but if your eyes are bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. The blind then, as the blind now, have much more difficulty in getting through life normally, to function as they would like and as they ought, because they can't see. And so they're in darkness. The whole body's in darkness because the eyes are dark. That's true physically. That's also true spiritually. So Jesus says, if then the light within you is darkness, that sounds like an oxymoron, doesn't it? A contradiction. A paradox. He said, if what's coming into your spiritual person, this light that's supposed to be coming in, is really darkness, then how great is that darkness? What is he saying? These religious leaders, who by their example and by their teaching were telling everyone else to be like them, had their eyes focused on material things. And that's what was coming into their spiritual eyes, and that was what was permeating their spiritual person. But this thing that was coming in was really what? Darkness. Not physically so, but spiritually. And so what's happened to their old inner person? It's dark also. They can't see to do the right thing. They can't tell others how to do the right thing. They can't lead others to do the right thing. Jesus will say in Matthew chapter 23 that they are blind leaders leading blind people. Not a good situation. So he says you need to have a single treasure. You need to have a single vision in which your entire focus of your spiritual eyes is on the heavenly. So your whole body will be full of light, will be guided in the right way. And then you can only have a single master. Because these people claim to be following God and obeying God when in fact they were truly obeying their other God. The God of material things. So Jesus will use this word that sounds very odd to us. Because it's not part of our vocabulary except as it's crept in from people who knew the Bible. And he'll say, no one can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and Mammon. Mammon was a old Chaldee word from the days when they had been in their past in previous generations had been captives in Babylon. And the word mammon meant physical things. But it went beyond that. The Chaldees had gods who were in charge of physical things. And so mammon not only carried the idea of physical things, it also carried with it the supposed gods over those physical things. And so when they came back from captivity, they brought that word back with them. And as their language changed from Hebrew over time to what was called Aramaic in New Testament times that the average Jewish person spoke, there was that word still stuck in their language, mammon. It meant material things and that which is an idol or a god over those material things. Jesus is saying that for the Pharisees and for anyone else, then or now, who is devoted to material things, they have a god. His name is mammon. And they're serving him instead of the one true God. Very interesting how he says there, no one can serve two masters. The word master there is a Greek word kurios. That sounds like I'm drowning you in Greek today, but you need to understand, as the sermon was originally written in the Greek, there was a reason those words were used. The word kurios was a word for lord or master. It was a common word used, first of all, of a slave owner. It was also used to refer to God and to refer to the Lord Jesus Christ. The word Lord there is the word kurios in the Greek. But it meant, first of all, a slave owner. And when he says no one can serve, the Greek word there is the word doulos. It's douleo, actually, the verb form of it, which meant to be a slave to. No one can be a slave to two slave owners. That's literally what it says in the Greek. But Jesus isn't talking about the social sin and evil of slavery. He's talking about the spiritual sin and evil of spiritual slavery. Because while people may claim to be slaves of God, they are in fact slaves of something else, really. And so when push comes to shove, they will always obey the one they really think is their master. If it comes down to a choice of choosing what will make them money or what will make them be pleasing to God, they'll choose the money every time, even while claiming to be God's people. That was true then, it's true now. So we have to ask ourselves, what is truly of greatest value to us? What do we treasure? Certainly people who have great wealth can treasure heavenly things. But when they do, then they see that wealth they have as only something God has put into their care to use for His service. And so whether I have $10 in my pocket or $10 million, it's not how much I have in treasure. It's what is my treasure. For that which is my treasure is what I will have my heart set on, my eyes set on. It will guide and direct all of my life, and it will be my master. I can't serve two at the same time. But thanks be to God, we have treasure that cannot be eaten by moths, are corrupted by rust or other things that eat away at those that would otherwise be valuable, nor can thieves come in and steal it. We have eternal life, an eternal dwelling place, and waiting for us even an eternal body, one suited for that heavenly existence. And we will live lives that seek to be pleasing to Him in that place where we intend to go. Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. I think by going through this again, we realize how truly not just revolutionary, but how truly anti this worldly Jesus' teaching really was. This had to rub completely the wrong way, these fellows who were so devoted to this stuff while claiming to be leaders of God's people in spiritual matters. It's still pretty irritating to people today, too, when they hear that they cannot devote themselves to serving this world and having the things of this world as their first priority, and still be pleasing to God.